Hello, all you cool cats and kittens. And we're back at the Say Be Your Way podcast. Today we have a guest, a dear friend. Some of you may know that we are married. We're going to get married by 40.
Yeah, we're both still unmarried.
Okay, but did we decide on your 40 or my 40?
We didn't. Maybe we have to meet in the middle.
Which should be what, 30, when I'm 30, when I'm 41?
Yeah.
Okay. It gives me like an extra year just to like see if anything will happen. But anyway, we are here with my them's been, Jenna Brown, but only I call them Jenna, so don't call them Jenna. Call them JB, okay? All right. But JB, who are you?
I'm just like losing my bananas over here listening to you. Like, it sounds like you're on, shoot, what's the Temple University radio station? The way you introed your show is just like, it's so smooth. Anyways.
It was for you. I don't actually introduce it that smoothly all the time.
Cats and kittens. Like, we're on late night jazz here.
That's from Carol.
From Carol?
From Tiger King.
Oh, I didn't watch Tiger King.
Oh, my goodness. We're not even going to go into that. Okay.
That's not the point. That's not why we're gathered here today. Anyways. No. I'm JB. I use they or he pronouns. I am, yes, Sabia's themsbend. And I'm also Sabia's co-lead teacher for programming at Birthing Advocacy and work as BADT's program director. And in addition to that work, I have been a full spectrum care worker for a long time, though I didn't know of the word doula until 2016. Abortion work is where I started and then added from there. My full spectrum practice centers queer and trans experience. The majority of the work that I do with folks at this point is around preconception and gender affirming care. But I do still work with folks around birth and postpartum as well.
Amazing. Amazing. Also, I forgot to add that you are my emotional support white person.
Yes. It's a role I take very seriously.
You're really good at it. Like, I tell people all the time, I'm like, I don't know what y'all thought or what you thought. Like, they don't play. So good job. But yes, all those things. Thank you for being here as usual. Thank you for being in my life. I mean, honestly, but some of the things we were talking beforehand and the conversation of like care work came up. And so it's like heavily on my brain, like care work and how like navigating being a care worker, needing care work yourself, navigating the specific type of care work that we do that is very like, you know, reproductive justice based and all other stuff, but also being the exact audience that we're aiming to create a better future for. And literally like in our personal and professional life, never getting away from this work. Like it's there all the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I wanted to see where we go with that conversation and see and get to know all your beautiful thoughts and hopefully, you know, walk out of here in a good place.
Yeah. Maybe with some hope, some positive energy without toxic positivity. I think that you have witnessed kind of my own shift since first engaging with Leah Lakshmi's Piyupsna Samanasena's book, Care Work, which is really a book about community care and disability justice. Changed the language that I used to describe my own work and my own calling, and also gave me a really clear, not really clear, because I don't think a lot of things are really clear, but it gave me a much clearer framework in terms of how I see my own positionality in the context of kind of this collective moment that we are in as human beings living in 2022, in the midst of an ongoing pandemic, a mass disabling event, in the midst of what is likely to be an economic depression where people are under-resourced. Like, there are all of these things that we could say. And I think that care work is something that you and I spend a lot of time thinking about, talking about, and then also like breathing and doing, and like you said, needing ourselves. And so, yeah, I think this conversation I'm excited for because it feels like an extension of just the many thought tangents that are happening inside of my brain. So knowing that you're also familiar with that, we'll keep it reeled in for the people, but excited to see where it takes us.
Yeah, I guess like maybe we can start with like, I mean, we don't have to get into like details of everything, but I think like we're all right now, or even on this particular call, like me and you are holding our own things, right? And I think like, you know, there's a lot of heaviness and being Black, especially over the last 2 years, right? Like it's just a lot. There's a lot of heaviness around being queer. There is, you know, in my own personal life, there's a lot of work around being a boss and like what that looks like and what it means and how do I maneuver through all of things. And then, you know, it, life, relationships. I also think there is this piece, like speaking of care work and that book being centered around disability justice, there's a lot of that too. Like being someone who struggles with chronic pain, being someone who suffers with, and I say suffer specifically right now because the bitch been suffering with depression and anxiety, many other things I can list as far as health goes, but there's still like this capitalist requirement to continue to work because bills have to be paid. But I also think with the positions that we hold in our like workspaces, in our community spaces, there also sometimes feel like a requirement to show up because, you know, we're looking at a post-Roe America. We're looking at all these fucking transphobic fucking laws and bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so much happening. And so it feels like, you know, it creates a harder time for showing up for ourselves, as well as asking for whatever our needs are to be met. So I guess, like, you know, that's me offloading. Sorry if I made anyone feel away, but here we are. Because also, Jenna has assisted me in becoming a more vulnerable person. But yeah, like, I feel the weight of those things, but I also love the work that I do.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, what is the balance? One week is like, I'm like, I can do this shit. We're moving forward. I can do 60 hours this week. Like, and then there's other weeks where I'm like, bruh, I can't even handle 2 hours of this. Like, I can't, because it's like working on an issue that you are in. Right? Like, it's not, there's no separation. I'm not like, oh, I'm working on this for these people. And then when I go home, I'm not affected by this. Like, all these issues are interconnected into my identities. And I just can never, there's no removal. So I guess, like, if you want to kind of speak on that and your current experience.
I mean, I think that one thing that's true of being folks who are called to care work is that we have to get really skilled at decentering ourselves and still acknowledging ourselves as whole people, right? We're like, not only, and particularly that aspect of like leadership and facilitation, right? Where you are creating space for folks to have a real, whole, full lived experience and for them to be vulnerable and for them to be seen and heard in a world that does not provide that. And even in close communities that often don't provide that, in family units that don't provide that, there's like this necessity to, at the minimum, decenter ourselves. And I think for a lot of us, that looks like really compartmentalizing how we show up, where we show up. But what gets lost in so many cases, and I know this has happened for each of us as we hold like leadership and facilitation roles, is like we turn away from the work we're doing, from the care that we're giving others, and we are just about on the verge of collapse and so desperately need care. And yet all of the people who we're in relationship with know us as the ones who provide care. And I think that the work that it takes to shift that is largely internal. I know that the way that it manifests for me, or has been in recent history in the past few months, as I navigate, you know, real like housing insecurity and just kind of unpredictability in my day to day, is I'm hard to read for people, right? Because I'm not going to, there are for sure moments where I'm like, I'll be like, oh, I'm just going to walk into a carpentry union and be like, hello, one apprenticeship, please. Or like, I'm going to be like, I'll just be a CDL driver for Sabia's business. Like, let me step into a role where there's less required of me. Or days where I'm like, okay, the way I see it, I have two options in a post-row world. I think that I either go completely off grid and talk to no one ever, live in the woods, or I join a socialist militia. Like, those are the two extremes. And none of that, I mean, they are in their own ways, right? Like, some of those, like, labor is care work in so many ways because our communities need it, but it's not the kind of care work that I'm actually dispositioned to, right? And so then I come back to this space of, no, I do what I do for a reason and I'm good at it. And the result of kind of holding this duality of wanting to give people room to be cared for and needing care of myself is that people say I'm hard to read because I'm often step in. I know people say the same about you. We step into spaces and we have a flat affect because that's the best that we can do to remain neutral. And I think a lot of care work comes out of compassionate neutrality, right? And so like, if I am to show up for others from this space of compassionate neutrality, where I deeply believe and trust the people around me who are asking for care. I have to then extend that to my own situation, which means, you know, a response in moments of crisis that people often can't make sense of. They're like, wait, but you seem okay right now. Because I have to be okay right now.
Like, y'all all are panicking. So who?
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. We'll be freaking out over here when we can't like get captions to run on Zoom. Then you'll watch us lose our shit because the little things get under our skin. But the big things were just like, yep, this is what's happening now. And what has worked for me kind of bridging this gap here, like and bringing it back around to, well, care workers need care, is I have to approach my own need for care with that same neutral compassion of like, this is a necessity. I need to make this ask of my community. I need to not hold feelings of shame or guilt for having a need. And I need to do that from a place of feeling like compassionately towards myself that I am deserving of that. And there's a thread there for me that maybe we'll get into that has a lot to do with my own recovery journey. But like, that's really the only way that I see I can approach both giving care to those around me and allowing myself to receive care.
This is true. I think like one of the thoughts that kind of come up is like, you know, being a care worker, it's something about it, at least for the people that I'm usually in community with, that is very easy for us. Like, it's easy for me to care for somebody. It's easy for me to assess, these are the needs. Let me ask you these questions. Let me, you know, provide this type of thing, get this going, and at least bring you to a space that is better than what you started off with. But it is definitely harder to facilitate those spaces within myself. And like, I was talking to my therapist and I was telling her, like, sometimes I just can't access the information that people are seeking from me as far as like what the need is. I'm like, I don't know, you know, like, I just don't know. Like, I mean, I could tell you something like stereotypical, I could say, but I don't know exactly what the need is. I can't necessarily access that need. Right. And so that's made it complicated for people who are like, I can't read you. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause I'm like, I don't know either. Like, I'm trying to figure it out. But one of the things I think I'm learning, especially in the last year or so, is that like, I have to surround myself with people that have the ability to care. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, I think like in my younger years, I would surround myself with people that was easy to give them care because it's easy for me to meet that need. Oh, you need care? Easy. So I'm going to surround myself with people that validate me in that way, even though, like all things, too much of anything is never great, right? So like now at the end of it, I'm like exhausted, I'm resentful because whatever, right? And now I'm like, what's your capacity to care, right? Just because like I need to be in community with people that can see things in me because they see it in themselves, right? Like, and it's not necessarily that people that weren't giving care were being selfish, right? We all have our own shit. We all are learning things. But I don't know, I've just kind of learned that that is what I need. And it's very much like a hard stop mm-hmm. for me now. Like if I'm like, once I get to a certain point and I'm like, this is not, it has to go. Because yeah. I know that I need those people in my life to assess me when I can't assess myself. I can easily just keep going, you know, like, and obviously you're one of those people, like you'll be like, you'll just look at me like you need to, I'm not going to give you this information because it's going to take you over the edge. We'll talk about this tomorrow. Or you're going to go to the woods. I'll see you when you come back. Like it's, because you can like assess the need because you can see it in yourself. Like even though I'm reflecting as like very neutral and very whatever, you're like, it's giving neutral, but it's giving on the edge. And so like, I appreciate that about our friendship. But I guess in that sense, like thinking about having that flat affect, thinking about maybe not always being able to access or feel like you have the space to say what your needs are. Like, what are you doing to kind of like surround yourself maybe with like a better, I don't say better community, but like things that will help you to navigate those spaces, even when it's hard for you to speak to what you're feeling.
I think that there's been so much in this realm that's been revealed to me in just even the past like 7 months. And a lot of that has to do with transitioning my lifestyle to being one that is mobile. And like necessarily I have needs. I have to make asks for my needs to be met. As I move from one place to the next, and in these places, I'm less grounded and less rooted and less resourced and less aware. And the people who have really shown up versus the people who have not, I've noticed patterns, right? And I think that it's like you're saying that like who we surround ourselves with matters. And for me, it's been the way that I allow the people who I'm already in relationship with to show up for me, right, matters. And so, you know, I think that one thing that we are really interested in being in conversation with our students about is like the professionalization of doula work specifically and the complications with that. And I think that for me feels like one reason that I move away from using that word for myself and I move towards care work, which is more community oriented, because some of the folks who have helped me make connections that have led me to resource or have directly provided resource to me are folks that were clients, were people who I I was in relationship with in this kind of facilitator participant space. And there are messages that we get from this capitalist, individualistic, professional space that say that's inappropriate. Like, these are people you care for. But the fact of the matter is that in community, when one person has excess of one thing, whether that's information, financial resource, space, we share, right? And having given folks this care before, it's natural that they want to reciprocate that. And I think that's one pattern that I've noticed that has been a big takeaway in terms of, again, I'm thinking large scale, like, how do I frame my own positionality in this world and in this moment? And the other piece is like very like socially loaded, but, you know, as a white queer person, I say this jokingly sometimes, but like, you know, people will ask me, oh, are you connecting with other like queer people who live on the road too, or this and that? And I'm like, I like use this a little bit as a litmus test where I'm like, hey, I don't know if you know this about white queer people, but most of us kind of suck. And like, the reality is that most of the people, and this is, you know, really extends beyond the 7 months of travel, but what I have found to be real in my world, in my life, is that kind of what I was describing in terms of we show up in crisis, right? We figure that out. Folks who are used to doing that are also the people who are most compassionate and show up and share. And when we look at identity-based, you know, information about who that is, we're talking about people who are multiply marginalized. Like, the majority of people who have put me up, who have helped me get connected to the resources I need, are not white, right? They're Black, they're Indigenous, they're Latinx, they're usually queer because that's who I'm in community with. And they're not middle class, they're working class. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's this disconnect here in terms of like, okay, well, how do I make sure that I am letting myself receive care? Being someone who was raised in an upper middle class upbringing and is now, you know, not resourced in that way, it's a little bit of culture shock to allow myself to receive care, right? Wow. Particularly when I know my own positionality as a white person is one of an immense amount of privilege. You know, I think that who we're in community with and the openness with which we have these conversations makes a big difference. You are my boss. You are my boss. Right? Like, and that's significant to me based on the identities we hold and based on like what I see in you and what I like really value about the way you show up in the world.
How do you value the way I show up in the world? Let's get in. Come on, let's do it.
Just a couple of fire signs gassing each other up. You are someone who, if you don't know the answer to something, you want to learn it. Like, you want to figure it out, and you don't want to figure it out just because like you're info hungry or like you're curious, which is how I am on my like 3 a.m. Wikipedia wormholes, right? You want to figure out because you want to figure out how that information can improve other people's quality of life. And that's just like not how most people think because they've been socialized under capitalism. So they're like, how does learning this benefit me? And you approach everything as how does learning this or how does gaining this resource or amplifying what we're already doing or scaling in this way, how does that serve to benefit the greatest possible number of people?
Because if it doesn't, like, it's like, what am I doing this for? I mean, and of course, everyone's going to have their own like things that they do for themselves. Take care of yourself. I'm not saying that, but I think it speaks to like what you're saying around like the way that we're positioned in the world, right? And like me being a Black person, I have been positioned in a space where I've seen my community take care of each other. And I know that where I am now is by no means because I did it by myself, whether it's the BADT team or whether it's the way that my Nana has showed up in the world so that my grandmother could show up a certain way, so my mom could show up and then I could show up a certain way. Like none of that has been done in isolation. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I find pleasure and joy in being like, if I could find out how this works, right? Because there's also like a privilege to knowledge, right? A privilege to education and privilege to accessing certain things. So especially when I'm in spaces that like, maybe I'm just, my identifiers are not, you know, traditionally in those spaces. I'm like, I know y'all doing this for a certain reason. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's benefiting you in a certain way. So let me find out what that is so I can make sure it benefits my community as well. Because you ain't doing it for nothing. There's something here, right? So thank you for that. And thank you for noticing that about me. But one of the things that I would say, there's a couple, okay, but it's two things that come to my mind. One is and sometimes it gets on my nerves at the same time, but it's like your emotional endurance. Like you can hold the complexities, like the JB shirt says. Like you can hold them in a way where I'm like, fuck this shit. Like, dude, it's just done. Like, we don't even have to, like, especially if we don't have, like, you know how I am when it comes to people. Like, I don't think people are like, you could just throw them away. But I do think I reserve the right to disconnect. But you can like hold this kind of like magical thing where like, we're going to shift and we're going to grow and we're going to learn. And I'm going to be patient with the process and the discomfort of what comes with it. And then I'm like, mm-mm. Like that is reserved for like no one really. Right. So like, I appreciate it. And I try to like, and in a lot of ways, I think, I have like, you have brought that to me, right? And the ways that we have practiced, we work together. Like you said, like we work together. And it's very clear. And the thing that I appreciate about you too, is like you have a level of humility that's not performative, like in the sense of like, you're my boss, but it's not like weird. It's like, you're my boss. That's the information. So I understand my role in this, but also we navigate being friends at the same time and we navigate having disagreements and we navigate agreeing. And we have moments where we're like hooked on each other. We have moments where we're like not so hooked on each other. And I'm usually the one that's like, but like you can like hold that and continue to show up. And even if you do take something personal, you're not afraid to speak on it and like let it exist and not be like, well, let me like not seem bothered or let me not seem whatever. You're just like, this bothered me. And it's like, that for me is just like a different way of existing. And it's something that I'm just learning from you and continuing to learn from you. Yeah. So that's one of the things. And then the other thing is we talk about capitalism a lot because I mean, how can we not? Like it's here, it's there, it's everywhere. And one of the things that people, I don't know if they know, they kind of know they've been in our space, but you're like, I'm not trying to acquire wealth. That's not really my thing. I think about that in the ways that me and you are different, right? Like our experiences, like I didn't grow up upper middle class, like, you know, like all these things. But I also think about like how in this world, you're holding that. Because I feel like this world is so scary. And I feel like money is attached to a lot of the fear. So I admire your ability to stick to your values and like to stick to what is true to you, even with like what I feel like is like a fearfulness that comes with that value. So I'm like, that's some brave shit. Because you know, I'm the opposite. We talk about it. I'm like, I need to get some money. I need to save it. I need to make sure that my family's good. I need to make sure that I have enough for this, for that, for whoever. But I admire like that strength to stick to that, especially in the world that we're in.
Well, one, just to address briefly, like the contextual difference, right? Is like, I'm not in a position where I need to take care of anyone in my family financially. And I don't have children. Dependents are my animals. You know what I mean? And for sure, I have moments where I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm a shitty pet parent. And I'm having one of those right now. Because I'm like, I can't even meet our needs. But I think like there's a couple of things in those two points you brought up that I feel are really, in my mind, integral to really showing up for and practicing the kind of community care that we're like dreaming of and envisioning, which is one, that directness, right? At this point, I say these kinds of things all the time. I don't know if that's my neurodivergence. I don't know if that's my traumatic brain injury. I don't know if that's who I am now that I'm not using drugs and alcohol, right? But all I know is that it just is. Like, that's just part of how I show up and how I communicate. And to me, that feels like really like a foundational practice, that kind of direct communication for practicing care work. Because sometimes we're talking literally when we're thinking about care work as basic need as someone needs help wiping their ass. Mm-hmm. There's no euphemistic way to say that. It's like, I need someone to wipe after I go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. It's as, and like, if we spend so much time being indirect and like not tending to these most basic tasks, that might seem like, well, of course, like what else? You're not going to be like, how else would you address that? Well, if we practice this in more subtle ways, like, oh, your friend says something that upsets you and you're just like, oh, well, water off a duck's back, like it did get under my skin, but I'm going to preserve our relationship by not mentioning it. You're likely that seeps into everything else you do.
Yeah.
You're just creating a neural pathway where that's your default. And for me, in my neurodivergent mind, that just feels like lying. And so I think that that's really, to me, feels super important to care work. And the other part is that, like, because I'm not in a position where I need to financially provide for anyone else, it's not that there's not fear. There's I have a lot of fear about meeting my basic needs. And I believe that really engaging in community care work, being that my role, as I see it in my community, is this traditionally undervalued type of emotional care work that you alluded to, right? It's really hard to pay the bills doing that in a way that feels in alignment with my values. So I have to rely on this kind of leap of faith into, hey, it's okay that I don't have savings, because like right now I'm sitting in a home that someone who I'm in community with has allowed me to stay in until I figure out what comes next and feel stable for me after this, right? And so like, obviously, there's privilege in that too for a number of reasons, not least of which is my palatability to people and my like capacity for maintaining positive relationship, which is not easy at all times. Like both you and I have, you know, significant mental health journeys that we're on. And there are times when I'm not a good person to be in relationship, but enough of the time that I do feel like that leap of faith can be another foundation to the type of caring community future that I hope for all of us.
Yeah. And I think like, even like in, at least in our friendship, I can't speak to anybody else what they got going on, but in our friendship, it is easier to tolerate the times where you're not so great and I'm not so great, because we have created an expectation of just not being so great. Right? Like you're going to have bad days, bad weeks, bad months. I'm going to have the same. And I also know that that's not connected to how you personally feel about me, or, you know, like I don't have to take it in that way. I can be like, Jenna's in a space. Hey, what do you need? Do you need anything? Good. Let me leave you alone. You want to just be okay, cool. Right. And it's the same way this way. And I think like a part of care work is just creating that space. You are a real person, a whole person. Things are not always great in your life, around your life. I mean, even sometimes things are great and you're still not in a fucking mood. And that's just like what that is. But I'm gonna check on you, you know, and we'll check on, you know, figure out what that looks like in your dynamic, you know. Jenna will send me a pulse check. Cause I definitely feel like you'll have your moments where like me and you just don't talk that much. But I can still like see what you're up to. Like you'll be on Instagram and I'm like, oh, they're over here, they're doing this thing. Okay. I have your location. Jenna's here, whatever. I feel like me is usually like I'm MIA for real. We're like, I don't have no Instagram posts. You ain't saying shit from me. And Jenna will be like, post check. I'm like, I'm here. Okay, cool. Right. And like, that's the way that we've learned to make space for harder times. Just like, I know like with current staying at, you know, the people's house and all that, like, I'm just like, hey, what's up? When you need me, like, let me know, like, whatever. And so I think it's like, you just have to create space, like, for people to show up or to not show up, for people to say what they need or not need, right? And like, also having a level of trust, we have built a foundation where when you do need something, you'll tell me.
Like, vice versa, right? That like, I think this type of like care in community means that we trust you're not going to offer me something that you actually like would have hard feelings about providing, and vice versa, right? Like, I'm never going to put myself out. I'm never going to overextend to show up for you because that's how much I care for you. And I think that's the other message we get about care work is like martyrdom, right? Overextend, out-resource yourself to care for someone else. And then you're going to be resentful. It's going to ruin the relationship. It's going to end up impacting your quality of life and how you show up in community. And so part of it is like trusting that if someone makes an offer, that they can follow through with that and you're not putting them out.
For sure. Because I'm still like, I've been like chilling on your situation. I've been like, I'm just going to mind my business. I see what's going on. I'm going to ask for the details of the plan. I was like, what is the plan? You know, and then like, we'll pick that up when we need to pick it up. But I guess maybe that's also like a part of it. It's just like, we'll pick it up when we need to pick it up. It doesn't have to like just float. Like it can just be picked up and trusting that it will be. And also another part of care work too, is just like having multiple people. And I know that that's like a blessing and a privilege, right? Like to be like, I'm in a community with multiple people that are willing to help me in different ways. But it's like, how else do we exist? Like, I just don't know. But anyway, so when it comes to care work, what's what I'm looking for? How do you tell people or communicate your availability for care work as it fluctuates based on your own life, your own shit? You know what I mean? Like what you was available for last week can be different from what you're available for this week. And sometimes even what you committed to a day ago is not what you can do anymore. So like, how do you navigate that in respect to caring for yourself and for the other person?
I think one is just stepping into cultures where like there are people who actually value that. I know like my email signature for my private practice just says that I like responded at a time that was best for my mental, physical, and emotional health. And I hope that you do the same. And I'm inviting people into that culture when they engage with my work. And that's something that, you know, working with and for you is a part of the organizations that you run as well. And I think that a big part of that culture is slowing down everything, right? Which is part of the work we're being asked to do for those of us that consider ourselves anti-capitalists. It's a part of anti-capitalist philosophy. For those of us that are working with characteristics of white supremacy, like that is a sense of urgency is one of them, right? And so pushing back against that. And I think both of those systems, capitalism and white supremacy, which are like very tightly wound up together and can't really be pulled apart, don't want us to be cared for because we can't be exploited if we're cared for.
And if you're moving so fast where you're not even recognizing your needs or moving so fast because of this level of urgency, like you just won't get cared for anyway, right? Like it's a part of the system to like keep things moving. Mm-hmm. So that you're never able to like get into that space of thriving. You're just always surviving.
And I think what's true about, well, there's two things that come to mind in terms of what's true about shifting the way that I show up in care work to be more reflective of that slower pace and culture of care is first and foremost that it's hard. There's a lot of internalized shit that comes up. It's work to shift when that's how you've been socialized. And then the other piece that comes up, and I think this is true for a lot of people I know who are trying to work in these ways, is it limits your access to resource because typically the people with the most resource are the people who are not working like that. They work really fast. They're not careful. They're not often caring. And those are the people who are going to book you for the biggest contracts. You know what I mean? That's where the money is a lot of the time. That's where the connections are a lot of the time. So I know for me, it's also meant like saying no to work that operates that way because it's going to reinforce this internal messaging that I was socialized with that I'm actively trying to push up against. And that's going to be ultimately harmful to me and for the people I care for. And because I can't match the pace and it's not worth it to me to compromise on this larger vision of it's not just, right? And this is where like the capitalist narrative is like, oh, well, then you're being lazy if you need to work that slow. Right? Which is just inherently ableist and inherently all of these other things. It's not just like me personally that I am not willing to put myself in that position. It's that I know that by putting myself in that position, I am moving away from this collective goal that I have for all of us to exist in more caring community that is resourced interdependently, right? That idea of interdependence coming from Sins and Valid's 10 principles of disability justice. So again, we see that thread here, but
yeah, that slowing down part has definitely been a part of, like, especially for like the last year, like low key, but high key, I just haven't been moving as fast. Some of it has been like, cause I literally can't, cause my body has a way of being like, oh, but you want to play? I got you. But, and then some of it has, a lot of it more recently has been by choice. And I think, you know, in those moments of slowing down, you get so much information, like information about whatever, yourself, your community, what needs to be done, what doesn't need to be done. And I think for me too, like there is sometimes like a guilt present in the fact that like I can slow down, but then there's also an excitement of like, I can't wait to create more moments like of this for other people. Like I have to embody things sometimes to really understand why it's important for me to make it possible for others. And I think like that's where I'm at right now, where I'm like, I'm just slow. And sometimes I really do feel bad about it. Like even in workspaces, I'm like, the team's going to be upset with me because I'm just not moving at the pace that I usually can move at. But it's like, I can't. Luckily, I'm like blessed to be on a team that like, we're pretty like, I mean, of course we get mad at each other and like all the other shit. Like we're not like, everything's perfect, right? But like, I feel like we all can come to a sense of grounding around like Jenna says, we're all doing our best.
I've been making people so mad saying that recently, but I have to believe it. You know, I've told you, I have to believe that.
So are people upset because they're being inconvenienced by someone doing their best, or are they upset because their best sucks?
That means accepting like some of the like worst things that happen in this world at the hands of people. Were people doing their best? I mean, that's like a really hard thing to accept. But we're talking about like generations and generations of people who have been exposed to these harmful systems and indoctrinated into them and harmed by them. And that's held in our bodies and that's passed down, and those values are passed down, and these values of, you know, of punitive punishment and violence. And I can't put that on one individual who acts from the places that they've been socialized within, right? They're still fucking doing their best in a world that is so, so hard to grapple with. We're hurting. You know, I think speaking to that guilt you brought up, for a lot of people, I've been in conversation with people about this a lot recently. I think for a lot of us that are aware of these layers and spend time and energy, a lot of energy thinking about them, surviving in this world and being conscious at that level, it's a kind of survivor's guilt, right? Where you're like, yes. Fuck, I feel guilty just for having the resource, like have someone who put me up, you know, to have a boss who I'm in good relationship with. Like I feel like so much survivor's guilt day to day for being a human being who's surviving in my body.
No, for real. And I think like, you know, when I see so much suffering, right? Like I see so many people going through so many things. And like, I personally start to, with that guilt, I start to kind of, like, I'm like, I shouldn't be where I'm at. I shouldn't, this doesn't make any sense. Like, then I start to like decrease my ability of like, I have worked hard. I have whatever, right? Because it feels like, how am I still here and this other person's not here, right? And like, how do I have this resource and this other person doesn't have this resource? And like, maybe there are some quick fixes. Maybe I can provide resource to certain people or, you know, like certain like times in my life, but I can't fix the whole thing, right? So it starts to just like play in my mind. And that's when I have to step away, right? Like that's when I had, but then there's guilt in stepping away because this issue is still present, right? And it's just like ongoing. And I think, you know, again, like circling back to the beginning of our conversation, it's wild to me that even though we do this very specific work, right? Like that is, the goal is liberation for all of us, right? Equity and all these things. It's really wild that like we still hold this level of guilt, even though we literally wake up every day and work on and chip on this a little bit at a time.
And that guilt does nothing towards the actual like goal, right? And I think that it's also by design, right? The same way that like these systems don't want us to be cared for, don't care that we're cared for, prefer that we are struggling and competing and oppressing one another. Yeah, they also benefit from this survivor's guilt. And so then the question is like, what are the practices we're using to release it? And I think that's where I know for me, and I know for you as well, like we have our own spiritual and embodied practices that we use that are really, you know, I think I want everybody to have access to practices that feel important to them. And these kinds of embodied practices, I believe, should be happening in community, but aren't necessarily great things to be talking about really candidly. But that's, for me, the only way, right? Is I wake up with that survivor's guilt and I have to move it.
Yes. Yes. Like, and even like in a more basic function of what that can look like for me, like, you know, I have chronic pain and like nonstop pain and just unpredictable pain. It sucks. Right. It like it interrupts my life on days that I'm like, go away. Right. But I still, you know, sometimes I push through and sometimes I don't. Right. But I know one thing for me that's really helpful that I have guilt around is like going to my massage therapist and like literally having her move my body, like move. And like I was depressed like 3 weeks ago. You know, I was depressed deep in it. And so my therapist, I hit her up that Thursday, like before I knew that depression was coming in. So I was trying to like whatever, but she didn't have any sessions open. So I like didn't respond to her. And then she hit me up on that Monday morning and she was like, hey, like what happened? Like, do you want to get a massage tomorrow? And I was like, no, because I'm going to be traveling or whatever. She was like, well, something, she said something. And I was like, well, I'm just like depressed, whatever. So she was like, all right, well, and this is like during the day. So she's like, I'm going to come to your house tonight at 7:30. Like, we're going to set up and get this 2-hour massage for you. And I knew that like, that was her extending herself right beyond what her plan was for sure. Like, you're coming to my house at 7:30 in the evening. You're going to be here massaging me into the night. Like, you know, like this was not your plan. Massaging is a lot of work. But when I tell you like that just moved the energy around, and like the next day I was able to like get up and I was able to do these things and I could feel like that energy and that movement, like literally helping me to lighten my load. And I was like, yo, like that's care work. Like, this lady came in the middle of, you know, she's busy, but she showed up for me. And also the thing that was also interesting was like, I didn't respond when she gave me her original availability because I like, that's not going to work for me. And she was like, I knew when you didn't respond that something was wrong. So that's why I hit you up. Cause mm-hmm. I know like when you feel, you get quiet. And I was like, reach out to me the second, double text me. Okay. Right. Like, make the connection, like provide the care. But that's just like a time where I just like, wow, like you really came through for me on a time that you did not have to.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it. And you came to my house and you was massaging me and in the night, the moonlight, it literally helped me move through what would have been a very heavy depression for at least 2 weeks. But when our community shows up, they show out. I was very happy. But yeah.
I mean, I just think that this is such a like big conversation and it can feel so heavy. And you and I are both existential people to begin with. And I hope for anyone who's made it this far through the dense swamp with us that you're hanging in there. And I don't know. I think just wanting to express encouragement that like, you know, I've been in relationship with people. I am in relationship with people who feel really alone and disconnected from community and therefore like really disconnected from the kind of care that they're needing. And, you know, definitely that's present in the reproductive health spaces that we work in around pregnancy and parenthood in particular, but also spaces like abortion and loss where people are more silent about their experiences. But it's just a human experience to feel alone and to feel unseen and not understood. And so, Sabia, you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, just kind of like the way that through our years of friendship, I've gently coaxed you into some more vulnerability. And there are safe and unsafe ways for each of us to engage with being vulnerable, right? But I hope for anyone who is feeling disheartened by this kind of appeal to community care that we're making because you feel alone, that you can find some ways to be vulnerable and be direct, not because I think that my way is the only way, but I think those are things that we can access in ways that make it our own and start to help what's a really contracted human experience to feel more expansive, even in moments of supreme resource depletion.
That part, and naming for those people that may feel that way, that it is hard. Like, It is so hard, especially if you are not someone who is naturally wired to be that way. And I'm one of those people. So, you know, one day someone's going to have to like, I don't know, there's been moments between me and Jenna where I was like, man, if someone was like here to record this, like this would be such a great like therapy tool or like a understanding of like humanness. Cause let me tell you, one time Jenna made me cry.
But right, like
it wasn't bad though.
Wasn't a bad cry. We don't have to be therapists to be therapeutic, right? I have no idea who said that for the first time, but that's like a phrase that gets thrown around. And so like, maybe if you're listening to this, this can be therapeutic for you. Like maybe even just like sending your friend, your one friend, if you feel like you have one friend in this world, a funny meme after this, like
or nudes.
Any exchange can be therapeutic. If I believe if the intention is connection and compassion.
Yeah, but really voting for the nudes, like, yeah. I know that we can talk for